Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnistry Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Race, the world's J-pop and alternative hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck. As you may have all heard, Russian singer Olga passed away last week after a bout with lung cancer. It was very shocking to hear about this, especially for someone who got to meet her a couple years ago at Anime Boston. She was very kind to me, and to have it just be me and Phil and John from the Issues program interviewing her there, it was a very big highlight for us at Anime Boston. A true privilege to be given that opportunity, and I will never forget that. Maybe it's just me, but it's weird when you hear someone you interviewed passed away. I don't know if anyone else in their journalism field has ever felt like this before, but you know, it's strange. It's weird. And it is very sad that she had passed away in the way she did. But, you know, while she has left this world of ours, her music will live on forever. And all of us here, not just at Boston Bastard Brigade, but all of us at the Electric Sisterhood, send our love and thoughts to her family, as well as those who were close to her in life. I know we're starting things off here on a somber note, which is not something we do often, but Olga deserves a special tribute to me, because she was one of those artists who, when you heard her voice, you were just drawn in to what she was singing. She was beautiful. She was very angelic, too, when it came to her singing. And it's just strange that now it's gone. We'll never hear anything like that ever again. So, yeah. I'm sorry. Don't worry. I'm going to do my best to lighten the mood in this week's episode. So, with that said, let's head on over to this week's playlist. And just remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And as a tribute to Olga, I'm going to open up the show with one of her songs, one of my favorite collaborations she did with composer Yoko Kanno. And this is the opening theme to Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, Second Gig. Here now is Olga with Rise, and I really hope you enjoy it.
I'll be
The Spunks with Habanero Junkies from their album Yellow Fever Blues, which would be the final release the band would make before splitting up. I still wonder if Hajime is still doing anything in the music industry. I would love to hear something new from him. So Super Bowl Sunday is happening next week, with the Seattle Seahawks defending their title against our New England Patriots. Everyone around here was excited about our 45-7 victory over the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, after all, it's a very big deal. This will make Tom Brady's sixth visit to the Super Bowl the first quarterback to do such a thing. It's something that deserves to be celebrated about. And then, someone shit in a punch bowl. News started trickling down that the Patriots used deflated footballs during their game with the Colts. It began after Colts linebacker DeQuell Jackson intercepted a ball late in the second quarter. After the play, he handed the ball to a member of the Colts staff and allegedly informed his coach about the softness of the ball. Upon investigating, they had discovered that 11 out of the 12 balls given to the officials turned out to be underinflated. Of course, now Jackson says the ball felt normal, so either there's another whistleblower that shifted the finger blame on him, or this whole allegation thing was completely made up and the findings was completely coincidental. But here's my question. How the hell did the balls become underinflated? Before the game, all the balls from both the Colts and the Patriots are inspected, over 2 hours before game time, precisely. They're given to the referees, inspected, and then taken to wherever they keep all the balls before the first kickoff. That would mean that if the Pats cheated, they would have to go to wherever this holding cell for the balls was and switch them out. And I'm pretty sure this area is guarded by NFL officials to make sure something like that didn't happen. So what's the missing link? Did someone from the officiating side tamper with the balls to benefit the Pats? What if this is some sort of ruse created by the Colts? What if the Colts tampered with their balls in hopes of making the Pats look bad after the game? Was it someone in the corporate side of things, if either the Colts or the Pats, as the NFL said they had interviewed 40 people in the behind-the-scenes area? Not to mention, the referees said all the balls were in compliance with the rules before the game even occurred. Usually, the weather can play a role in this, as the games are usually played in the cold. But before kickoff, the temperature was in the early 50s. However, a great little report from out of WCSH6 in Portland shows how even that temperature can make a ball deflate below rule regulations. Then how about this? Factor in all the times these balls are manhandled during play. Not to mention how rough they are grabbed and smashed onto the ground. Gronkowski made a funny remark at how spiking the ball after a touchdown caused some deflation, but I wouldn't be too surprised if something like this could happen. I'll bet just a tiny bit. Hell, during a basketball game, the ball is sometimes switched out for another due to it losing some of its bounce, giving the crew time to inflate it some more. Now, both Belichick and Brady held press conferences on Thursday denying any knowledge of all this. And I'm inclined to believe them, and it's not because I'm biased. It's because of who runs the Pats, Mr. Robert Kraft. Not only is he one of the kindest NFL owners out there, he's also not the type of person you want to double-cross. Because if you lose his trust, you're out of the door without any hesitation, with practically no way back into the NFL, much less the Patriots. Neither Brady or Belichick would pull a stunt like this and risk getting caught, especially if they have Robert Kraft watching them. Now here's another question. How come the Colts balls aren't being tested? I would imagine that if they were to do the exact same testing, they would find some of their balls deflated. Maybe not as many as 11, but a fair amount to show that both sides had their pigskins inflated before regulation standards. Fair is fair, after all. Test one side, test the other. But you know what? To play along with the complainers, let's eliminate the score from the first half of the game, as that's when they started using the regulation balls. And let me be the first to congratulate the New England Patriots for completely shutting out the Indianapolis Colts 28-0 at the AFC Championship. The better team still would have won. The Pats will still be going to the Super Bowl, taking on the Seattle Seahawks. Now let's stop the sports talk, because I'm pretty sure a good portion of you don't really follow the sports world in great lengths. It's just something I really wanted to get off of my chest. Seriously, Jesus Christ, like, where were these NFL officials when Ray Rice beat his fiance? On camera. In a public area. You know what? I'm done. Screw this investigation. Hopefully by the time this episode airs, this whole thing will be swept under the rug like it should be. let's return to some music. Here's a cyberpunk band that Andrew from Wicked Anime introduced to me. They're called Dubstars Inc., and they have a new album coming out in March called Terrapunk. On February 13th on soundcloud.com/dubstarsinc, they'll be hosting a digital release party where people can listen to the new album and toss some questions to the bands and see if they answer them. From Terrapunk, here are Dubstars Inc. with Take It!
Like before, never hope I could.
with Dragon's Fire, the title track from their 2008 release. They are another band that sadly disbanded a couple years ago, so there's not really anything to discuss much about them in that regard. So there's this new comedy that's been airing on FXX called Man Seeking Woman. The first two episodes have run as of this recording, and so far I'm really enjoying their approach on how we perceive the world around us. It stars Jay Baruchel, better known as Hiccup from How to Train Your Dragon, as Josh, who tries to re-enter this dating world of ours after a long relationship. It also features Eric Andre, whose batshit crazy talk show on Adult Swim is one of the most brilliant things on TV, playing his roommate Mike. It took me a few days to figure out what it was about this series that had me laughing my ass off. At first, I thought it was the non-sequitur style of humor it delivered, from Josh's first date being with a literal troll who lives under a bridge, to the reveal that his ex is now dating Hitler. The Hitler, that is. But it was in the second episode where I discovered what it was that really drew me into Man Seeking Woman. So Josh gets a girl's number on a train at the end of the first episode, and he seems ready to move on. However, Mike discovers that Josh owns a couple things from his ex, which then causes the house to be possessed by an evil spirit, forcing Mike to call an exorcist. A bit involving a stuffed toy is incredibly funny. You have to watch it for yourself. Then there comes a bit where Josh wants to send this new girl a text, and he gets help with this task via his sister and a group of top military advisors in a sort of like presidential war room. And it's at this moment when I figured out where I've seen this style of humor and why this show draws me in. What Man Seeking Woman is a live-action cartoon, and not just any sort of cartoon, no. This is the type of humor we've come to see in many anime comedies. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, there are elements, small ones mind you, of series like Baka and Test, Hayate the Combat Butler, Cromartie High School, Gokure Kokore-san, Kill Me Baby, School Rumble, and especially the melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya. And while there are no avatar battles, high school assassins, or butler competitions, the way they deal with the most insane things as if they're part of the normalcy of this world is exactly how Man Seeking Woman deals with trolls, Hitler, possessed house, sending text messages, and even with the upcoming episode with the swirly eyes that apparently everyone gets after puberty. It's why a show like Man Seeking Woman grows on me so much. That, and I can really relate to Josh. He's like Kyon, whose world is turned upside down after a drastic change in his life. Only here, instead of a woman entering his life with the urge to bring forth time travelers, espers, and aliens, it's when the woman parts with him when the crazies come out to play. Seriously, if you're a fan of anime comedies, you will love Man Seeking Woman. You can watch it Wednesday evenings at 10:30 on FXX, right after It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And if you've watched the show and you agree or disagree with my findings of this program, comment on our page or write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. But if you haven't seen it yet, please check it out. And now, let's return to today's playlist. Those who are listening to our Kung Fu Christmas radio play will find this next song familiar, as well as those who have seen a certain season 2 episode of the cartoon Wakfu. The singer's name is Ichiro Mizuki, and he is the one responsible for creating the supergroup known as Jam Project. It's the title track from his 2011 album, and it features vocals from Miki Asakura. This is The Hero. Hero!
ある限り だけに答えがある。心の弱さと向き合い、そこから必ず人は強くなれる。その先へ光は続く。まだ見ぬどこかへ。
Yes, that was Ben Folds singing in Japanese from Stems and Seeds, an expansion release of his brilliant 2008 album Way to Normal. That was Hiroshima, a song about Ben playing a show in Japan and cracking his head open as he walked out to perform. Later this year, he'll be teaming up with the orchestral band Y Music for a new album with a tour beginning sometime in April. You can find that trailer for it on YouTube. It sounds really great. Nintendo is now slowly but surely starting to bring out some Wii titles onto the Wii U eShop, with Punch-Out, Metroid Prime Trilogy, and Super Mario Galaxy 2, although not the first one, strangely, already released as of this recording, along with Sin and Punishment 2 and Pandora's Tower coming in the near future. Now, I see this as a great opportunity for Nintendo to bring to the States some titles that never made it to our shores, some of which were critically acclaimed, but yet were never translated for the English language audience. It happened with some other games from consoles past, so who knows? It could happen. So here are my suggestions. For starters, we gotta mention Captain Rainbow. The game followed Nick, whose alter ego Captain Rainbow was once a super popular character, but no longer is. To regain this love, he travels to an island where he must help past Nintendo characters like Little Mac from Punch-Out, Birdo from Super Mario, Takamura from Takamura's Ninja Castle, and Lip from Panel del Pon make their wishes come true. It was loved by many who played it, but it never arrived on our shores. Maybe this virtual console stuff could help with that. Second, there's Disaster, Day of Crisis, created by the same folks behind Xenoblade Chronicles. You played a former US Marine as you navigated through hazardous areas, solve puzzles, and attempt to save lives. It was a very cool concept, and it was praised by critics, although not as much as Captain Rainbow was. And it did get an English release in Europe and Australia, but alas, no US release. I think the eShop can change that. For anime fans, there's Soul Eater, Monotone Princess. I was shocked that this wasn't brought to America, especially after the popularity of the show with fans around the world. It dealt with the Meisters and the Weapons going against an organization that's gathering souls for some unknown reason, and it featured two new characters created by the manga's author, Grimoire and Ponera, the former of which would be reintroduced in the series as Noah. Maybe it's just the anime fan in me, but I would love to be given a chance to play as Maka, Black Star, and especially Death the Kid. Finally, we of course have to mention Zero Tsukihami no Kamen, better known as Fatal Frame 4. Do I really have to explain why this one needs to be brought over here? It's fucking Fatal Frame! We have all been clamoring to play this game legally, so please, Nintendo, give it to us! Not to mention, they also came out with the remake to Fatal Frame 2 on there in 2012, but only released it in Japan and Australia. And then there's also the Wii U game Fatal Frame Oracle of the Southern Raven that still hasn't come out. Look, Nintendo, what you should do is release the Wii U game and have, like, a code bundled in to at least download Tsukihami no Kamen. Just give us the Fatal Frame games already, okay? What was I talking about? Oh yeah. Wii games not released in the US that should get the eShop treatment. I know I've missed a lot. A lot. So, if there are any that you think should be added to this list, comment on our page or write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. I'm sure there's a ton of them that deserve this treatment, as I've probably just scraped the surface. Coming up, we've got a track from Duran Gray's new album, Arc, which was just released last month. It calls back to their pre-Withering to Death era and has Kyo showing more of his singing voice once more rather than his scream. This track is called Behind a Vacant Image. favorite ladies from Tsushimamire with E Tempo Des from 2007's No Miso Shortcake. They are touring the States again in March with the South by Southwest Japan Night Tour, and I overheard from Mari that they will be in Boston sometime during that stay, so cross your fingers that this will still happen. Well, the new anime season is upon us, and there are plenty of shows that are on our radar. Now, normally, I wait until I watch, like, the first three episodes to discuss a show, and perhaps about four, five, six, seven, a lot more, rather, before I write an article. But there is one series that I just saw the first episode of that I would like to talk about, and that is Yachiman Night. Those who have been listening here since the original Boston Bastard Brigade podcast came out know that I am the biggest Yachiman fan. Back in 2010, I even talked about the first couple episodes of both the 1978 version and the 2008 reboot anime series. Both were great shows, as they were full of great action, comedy, and lovable characters. So, with the 40th anniversary of Time Bokon, which was the show that preceded Yatterman and featured characters related to the universe, Tatsunoko Productions is bringing us what is the next chapter in this series. And those that are, like, looking for more laughs, you better brace yourself. The first episode of Yatterman Night focuses on the descendants of the Yatterman villains, living in poverty as punishment for what their ancestors did. We meet 9-year-old Leopard, whose mother Dorothy introduces her to the world of Yatterman through children's books. And through these tales, she learns the difference between good and evil. One day, Leopard stumbles upon a boarded-up shack, which features memorabilia of the evil Doronjo and her henchmen, Boyaki and Tanzura. And it's here when she discovers about her past. On her 9th birthday, the mother falls ill. So Leopard and her two guardians, Volkites and Elephantus, head to the Yatter Kingdom to try to get medicine. When they arrive, they're greeted by gunfire, forcing them to turn back and sailing a horrible fate for Dorothy. With the way the first episode is set up, it's going to be a big role reversal. The Yattermen have become corrupt, and the descendants of past evils decide they need to rid the world of this corruption. Leopard takes the reins as Doronjo, while Volkats and Elephantus become Boyaki and Tanzura, respectively. And so far, it's looking like a pretty good show. I love how it's animated, very smooth and bright, and I think the voice acting thus far is pretty top-notch. But know that it's not going to be a silly series like its predecessors. There are some funny moments here and there, but it has a very, very dramatic side to it. Think like what Full Metal Alchemist was. A good mixture of comedy and drama, and that's what I'm hoping Yatterman Night will be delivering. You can watch Yatterman Night on the Funimation site and on Hulu, not to mention a ton new anime on those sites, as well as on Crunchyroll too. Now, on next week's show, we'll hopefully be joined by the Fleming Brothers of Wicked Anime and Scarlett and Jared of Scarlet Rhapsody as we chat about anime in 2014. The good, the bad, and the ugly, so tune in for that. But right now, let's play a couple more tracks. We're gonna get a little political with a song from the Night Watchmen, the side project from Rage Against the Machine's Tom Morello, and this is from 2008's The Fabled City, featuring vocals by System of a Down's Serge Tankian. Oddly enough, both just collaborated on a cover of Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train, which was interesting to say the least. Anyway, this song is called Lazarus On Down.
I've been tearing and I've been torn. The temple steps are smooth and worn. What Judas been doing, there ain't no knowing. On the olive vines, something different's growing. Lazarus on down. Lazarus on down. Come on, let's push on through. Lazarus on down.
raised a cup in Caiaphas' name. In the potter's field, blood beneath the tree. That money's gone, son. What's left you owe me? Lazarus on down. Burning ore. What's that moving beneath the sword? The street lights out. Dark shape on the cross. Lazarus on down. Lazarus on down. Shepherd's eyes, or just another little dark surprise. I'm just like you, Dad, thin and cold. If you didn't know it, well, now you know.
We'll be right back.
by Envy. This is from their Split EP. Envy was one of the many bands that partook in the recording of one of the four tribute albums to Bloodthirsty Butchers early last year. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbashbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com and on Twitter at king_baby_duck. Like us on Facebook.com/Boston Bash Brigade and Facebook.com/Land of Esh. For more articles about all things geek, go to egnnow.com/Electric Sisterhood. And don't forget about all the other shows under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues Program. We're going to end the show with a little Puffy, and this song comes from their 2006 album Splurge. A lovely little melody to spin when the stars are shining bright. This one goes by the name of Radio Tokyo. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps.